Welcome, Leuchteras. Put away your paddleboard, Kevin, and dock your Waverunner, Kimmy. The summer break is over, and we return to the most revered and maybe feared circuit of the year, Spa-Francorchamps, for the 12th round of the season, the Belgian Grand Prix. Since 1925, this circuit, located in the Ardennes region of eastern Belgium, has challenged drivers with elevation changes, negative camber, and corners and chicanes that are now legendary. The unpredictable weather here is also legendary. The track can be wet, dry, or both at any time, and often is. Many epic race battles, like Mika on Michael in 2000, and spectacular crashes like the 13-car pileup in 1998 have taken place here. So to win, the driver must become a warrior for 44 laps. The Merck teammates start at the front, but we're not smelling the team spirit here. Will their discord leave the door open for another driver to win? Who will be celebrating with chocolate, waffles, beer, and fries? And who will just be feeling fried? Get out a bottle of mayonnaise and stay tuned, listeners. This is Mademoiselle Desiree, and this is your F1 Weekly Belgian Grand Prix Racecast.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 661, August 28th. 2014. Nasser?
This edition of Belgian Grand Prix podcast is brought to you by Jupiler, ice cold and fresh all the way from Eau Rouge to Redion. Back to you, King Leopold of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, would Ross Brawn have done a better job at Mercedes? Rosberg knows nice guys finish last. And will Fernando really go to McLaren? Stay tuned for Motorsports Mondial with the King. We've got 50 words from the F1 Weekly Forum on the Belgian Grand Prix. We've got Tech Talk with Tim and special interview with Max and Jos Verstappen. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. Thank you very much. I am so, so glad the long and needless wait is over. And what better place to start the second half of the season than Spa? And what a tremendous, if I may say, hate-filled start to the second half of the season. And you and I and everybody knows two tigers in a cage have never worked in Formula One, but now one of them is a little wounded. I am surprised it has taken so long for them to play Let's Get Physical.
Absolutely, it did take a long time, and I don't understand what all the fuss is about. We know that world champions are won by ruthless, dominant, type A personalities that do anything to get the Grand Prix. I thought this was a long time coming. It was a small contact that blew up a tire and got the heated excitement in the Mercedes garage really going. It was exciting.
Yes, it was fantastic. A lot of tremendous racing behind them. But this has really become like the World War III. Toto Wolff saying totally unacceptable. And you know what is amazing? If you look at different websites, now they're talking about Lewis leaving Mercedes, going back to McLaren. Sebastian Vettel may be in a McLaren Honda. Nando will be there. I mean, this has really shook up the establishment.
Well, let's put it this way. We haven't seen this kind of excitement since 2007.
What happened there, Clark?
There was some texting. There was some little funky stuff going on. And Fernando was machismo. It was great.
Those were the days of Hungarian goulash and where you take some tips from your physio during a pit stop, huh?
Absolutely. But these rumors of Fernando Alonso going to McLaren we'll talk about later, but I find it hard to believe. This Belgian Grand Prix was fantastic. I really enjoyed all of it, including Toto Wolff, Niki Lauda freaking out, which I personally believe they shouldn't have done. They should have done that behind closed doors. So I thought there was unprofessionalism across the board.
Absolutely unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. Lap number two of a long race. A crash between two main teammates. You know, we have often discussed that situation. Happened today.
Can you apportion blame?
Well, I think it's pretty clear what happened out there. You don't try to overtake with the knife between your teeth, is that how you say it? In lap number two, and then damage both cars.
Do you think this is a watershed moment in the battle between them and their relationship?
I think it is. This is a decisive moment for the battle between the two of them and for the team.
What did Lewis say to you after the race?
Oh, he's very upset, but there is not a lot to say. I mean, we've kept him out there for a long time with a very damaged car. He will recover quickly, that's how he is, but obviously not very happy at that stage.
Toto, how are you going to handle this situation now?
It's going to be handled.
Well, you know, it's a high-stake game. A lot of billions of dollars are poured into these operations by Formula One teams and manufacturers. And they have to show their emotion somewhat because the media is going to hound them like you won't believe.
And oh, no. I mean, I think it's great.
Yeah, and I don't think that team orders will work as long as both drivers have a chance to claim the championship. I have a feeling this is going to get more ugly.
Oh, it's definitely going to get uglier because now we've got some people that are right on the edge of complete breakdown. I mean, we're talking the emotions are bubbling so hard. I mean, we're talking lava, molten lava. This is fantastic. I can't wait for Monza. I'm telling you, we haven't seen nothing.
Yes, I agree with you. And, you know, LCH has to win at Monza and do what he did early in the season, do another four in a row. Otherwise, you know, the Abu Dhabi double take may throw another twist in the saga. And I think Toto Wolff will be really howling if these two guys keep fighting and taking each other out. And next thing we know, Daniel Ricciardo is the 2015 world champion.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, Madge. No, but what's very, very interesting is you're right. LCH has to win in Monza, but LCH is now an emotional disaster. He's not. I mean, don't forget, Nico Rosberg signed a $52 million deal with Mercedes for the next 3 years. Lewis Hamilton has got nothing.
Well, actually, the news today is that his contract talks have been put on hold by both himself and his peeps. 19 that's, management or whatever it's called. And
that's Henry Kissinger talking right there.
I will not be surprised if LCH or Nando end up at McLaren next year.
I wouldn't be surprised either. This is very fascinating. I think Honda would welcome LCH, but nevertheless, this is exciting stuff, and I'm loving it. So
you got to look at the lighter side of things. What I was thinking after hearing all sides of the story, I was thinking, what if this was 2013, and Vettel had done to Weber what Nico did to LCH, I think two people would be defending Seb, Christian Horner and Dr. Helmut Marko.
Probably. I mean, I remember when Seb passed Mark Weber against team orders, and it didn't really cause any trouble.
Yeah. But do you remember when the two collided? It was fault in the eyes of everyone. I think it was Istanbul, I believe.
Yes, absolutely. I remember it very well. It was exciting. I love collisions. I love it. Caution.
Oh, yeah. This is what you call ration.
Exactly. Boogity, boogity, boogity. But no, this is great stuff. Sure enough, we did get, I was hoping for a wet race. We didn't get that, but we got a wet qualifying, which really didn't amount to nothing because it was still the usual suspects in the end.
Yes, I was really hoping for some sort of rain action, not all race long. to mix up the field, but it was not to be. But nevertheless, we got a fantastic race. And the dice between Nando and Vettel and Kevin Magnussen, that was, I mean, beautiful.
The last two laps were unbelievable. I think Fernando was a little frustrated there.
Yeah, Nando. Well, you know, Raikkonen did well this time, surprisingly. So Nando has reason to be. But the guy is a tremendous racer, I have to say. Goes without saying, actually.
I completely agree. Actually, Fernando now is a synonym for great racing.
Absolutely.
Even LCH said, ask Fernando.
Yes, very true.
Yeah, so those things just are axioms now. They don't need to even be explained.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's talk about qualifying a little bit.
Okay.
What'd you think?
Well, I have to say this, you know, with all due respect to Lewis's problem and technical issues and bad calls in qualifying, Nico is really doing the job and business of LCH in qualifying. I mean, I have to say that.
Yes. I mean, I don't think any of us pictured Nico Rosberg doing such a great job against a really fast teammate.
Yeah, well-proven talent, you know.
Yes, no, absolutely. This is really impressive. Rosberg's impressive. I mean, it's Schumacher-esque, and the ruthlessness, it's cutthroat. This is millions of dollars. This is for posterity forever. Nico is not going to let this go.
No, I don't think so. You know, what has really impressed me, the guy has done a tremendous job. This was his seventh pole of the season, and Lewis, I believe, has not been on pole since Barcelona, and that was the opening round of the European leg. But what really impressed me about Nico, you know, I've been thinking about it this evening also, Clark, you can watch it on YouTube also. In the first inaugural season of GP2, I think halfway through or even a little bit beyond halfway through, Nico Rosberg was nowhere in the championship hunt, and I remember that season very well. Because it was their first GP2 season and, you know, Keke's kid was there. And this guy came from behind and took the championship from Heikki Kovalainen. And when Lewis went four in a row, I mean, this kid kept his cool. And that was the only person I've ever seen as more cooler than him was Jacques Villeneuve when he was under pressure from Michael Schumacher. And that was no light pressure, as we all know.
Yes, no, I completely agree. I'm very impressed with Nico Rosberg. I think he's impressed everybody substantially and blown everybody away by his coolness, his demeanor, and his rattling the LCH cage.
Yeah, and this is not somebody who is picking up races. I mean, he's not picking up victories like Kovalainen won in Hungary. You know what I'm saying? I mean, sticking it to LCH as and when possible, a tremendous job in qualifying. And, you know, he will be a very good world champion if he wins it this year, which I think he will. He speaks several languages and has a big last name. And I think this is going to be good for motor racing.
I believe so as well. This will make Bernie happy.
See.
That's all that counts. But an interesting wet qualifying. I was happy to see the wetness. But in the end, nothing changed. I was really surprised that it leveled the entire playing field, and we had the usual suspects out. Of course, let's not forget Andre Lotterer from Le Mans fame was starting in place of Kamui Kobayashi.
Yeah, you know, talking of Andre Lotterer, you are known by the company you keep. He is the first driver to make his F1 debut in his 30s since the one and only Yuji Ide. And he's 32 years old. His papito was originally from Peru, could be a Peruvian of German descent. And like you said, he has won Le Mans three times. And his main claim to fame is that he has had some racing affiliation with Dr. Colin Colas, you know, also known as Chavsky. And very surprisingly, he outqualified, you know, regular driver Marcus Ericsson. That was very, very impressive.
It was very impressive, especially in the wet, especially in a Caterham, and especially since Marcus Ericsson had more experience behind that car. So I thought, there you go, a good seasoned driver, under pressure, knows what to do, and he outqualified Marcus Ericsson by 1 second. Very impressive.
Yes. Were you surprised with the front row of the grid?
No. The front row of the grid is pretty much going to be like that unless something bizarre happens. I mean, anything could happen in Formula One. No, I wasn't surprised. Come on. Mercedes, Nico Rosberg, Lewis Hamilton. I mean, the whole top 10 was very typical. No surprises at all.
Yeah, but before Sunday's race, I was very surprised to read that only four times in the last 13 Belgian Grand Prix that the pole sitter has gone on to win the race. So the wind was blowing in Hamilton's way. And when he won there in 2010, that was also from second on the grid. So I was expecting a fantastic race between these two Merck drivers.
Absolutely. And I was expecting Fernando Alonso to win. So what happened there?
Well, you may have to wait another race.
I might have to wait another year. So there you have it. Anyway, I thought qualifying was normal. It turned out this way. Mercedes on the front row, Sebastian Vettel in third. All of a sudden, Red Bull is showing some pace. Fernando fourth, Ricciardo fifth. Valtteri Bottas out qualifying Felipe Massa again. What do you think's going on over there at Williams and Felipe?
You know, the kid has done very well, almost won the championship, has won a lot of races. And, you know, I will remember him as the driver who won races fair and square as with Schumacher as teammate, with Kimi Raikkonen as teammate. He's now at the tail end of his career. And Bottas, you know, he was a very impressive driver in junior Formula, as we have seen with Grosjean, Gutierrez, and so many other drivers, Robert Wickens. And Bottas, I'm not really surprised because, you know, in his younger days, he beat Daniel Ricciardo in the Formula Renault Euro Cup, which is a very competitive series. And he also won the GP3 in his rookie season. And a very nice kid. You know, I got a chance to talk to him and his papito at Harris early this year. So I'm very happy for him. I'm always happy when a tremendous talent gets into the right package and starts delivering.
Do you know who his management team is?
Yeah, of course. He is one of his earlier backers was Mr. Toto himself.
Exactly.
And this information was relayed to me several years ago when he was in F3. By Rauno Bottas, who is Valtteri's Bottas' papa.
So there are rumors that Valtteri Bottas could be LCH's replacement at Mercedes next year.
Yeah, something is going to happen there, let me tell you that.
No doubt. Kevin Magnussen now qualifying Jenson Button in 7th, Kimi Räikkönen in 8th, Felipe Massa in 9th, and Jenson Button in 10th, of course. He is now talking about possibly being forced to retire because of Fernando El Machismo.
No, and there are also reports, or rumors, I should say, that Jenson Button may be exchanging seats with Bottas, going to Williams, where he was once upon a time.
Yes, at the beginning.
Yeah.
No, that would be interesting. I mean, you know, I don't see the point of having two seasoned drivers at Williams, but who knows? Jenson Button is used to being powered by a Mercedes, so that could work out. Just fine.
No, there is a good chance that, you know, Petrobras, the big Brazilian oil company, they are one of the major sponsors of Williams' team. And, you know, cousin Felipe Nasser is their test driver or third driver, whatever that means these days. And I will not be surprised if one Felipe is replaced by another Felipe.
Ooh, bravissimo, bravo. And you know what the rain made me remember when I was watching qualifying? And I started daydreaming a little bit. And I started thinking, Fisichella, bravo, 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 Fisico.
When he was in pole position?
Of course.
Yes.
The beginning of the end of his career.
Yes.
Yes, it's fascinating. But yeah, I always start daydreaming sometimes when I'm thinking about Spa. But there you have it. Anyway, oh, Daniel Kvyat out qualifying Jean-Éric Vergne. And Nico Hülkenberg really not having, he just couldn't put it together all weekend. He was the one surprise for me in this entire qualifying, not getting out of Q1. What's going on with Nico? Is Nico falling apart?
No, I don't think so. But that was really a surprise for me. If you expect one of the few drivers to do very well in the wet, that would be Nico Hülkenberg. But I'm sure you know I'm sure you can blame his package or setup. But I don't think he has hit the delete button on his talent. And there's more to the story than what we know.
I understand. But the biggest problem with Nico Hülkenberg, each year goes by, he can't get into a great seat. Now, luckily, he didn't go to Lotus and Maldonado stayed over there because that's now a dog of a car. But it's too bad because Hülkenberg, great talent, just can't get in the right seat. And as the years go by, now we've got young talent like Max Verstappen coming in next year. And unfortunately, Nico Hülkenberg could get lost in the storm.
Well, you know, that's the problem in motor racing. And I was talking to somebody just about a week ago. And I said, you know, if you go into a high-profile junior series, and for whatever reason, if you don't win in your first season, then you are risking getting blown away by a rookie. I mean, just look what happened in F3 this year.
Right.
Max Verstappen comes in first year of racing and six races in a row. The season is not even over. The guy has won 8 races. What do you expect?
Yeah, no, and stay tuned, everybody, to that interview later on in the program because it's outstanding.
And exclusive to F1 Weekly.
Of course. Well, F1 Weekly is the new Time magazine for motorsports.
Wow.
I know. Big checks are on their way, Nasser.
I sure can use them. Clark, make another run to Sao Paulo and watch the Grand Prix there. That should be fun.
Yeah, me too. I might be able to move into a mobile home or something.
There you go.
You know, upgrade.
Yeah, there won't be shortage of that near the Interlagos track, let me tell you that.
Excellent. Anyway, let's go to race day. No rain. I was very disappointed. Beautiful day in the Ardennes Forest.
Did you watch the race on NBC Sports or Sky TV?
I watched the entire race on NBC Sports, but then afterwards, because they cut out almost everything, then I go to my computer and stream Sky TV for the everlasting coverage with Damon Hill and the boys and Martin Brundle.
Yes, I really enjoy Martin Brundle, let me tell you that.
I know you do, but that's the kind of guy you are, Nasser.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, anyway, great race. Let's talk about the start. Of course, Fernando Alonso, apparently his battery went kaput on the grid, remember?
Of course.
Yes, terrible, but they were able to throw a new Interstate battery in there before the last car passed him, so he was able to get back into his fourth position and not lose a beautiful, beautiful situation.
Yeah, a lot of teams are not happy that they pulled this cheesy trick by leaving the crew members there so he can, you know, reclaim his position.
Well,
but it's Nando, so you're not going to see anything wrong.
Exactly. Fernando is the standard by which everybody lives by.
There you go.
There you go. Because, you know, F1, it's Fernando.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. Interesting. And, of course, he does get a 5-second penalty. He didn't have a great race anyway. Kimi Raikkonen did, so there you have it, and there you go. But anyway, the start was outstanding. Nico Rosberg had a terrible start. Lewis Hamilton had a great start, and so did Sebastian Vettel. It was interesting. I thought it was fantastic. A clean getaway for Lewis Hamilton as he took the lead on the first corner. Sebastian Vettel as well as he sweeps past Nico Rosberg down to third place. Vettel, though, pushing too hard, runs wide at Lacombe and drops back to third place. Lewis Hamilton defending well from his friend Nico Rosberg to keep the lead at the end of the first lap. There's contact for Jules Bianchi at the first corner. We really don't care about Mauricio at this stage of the game. Then, lap two, the key is contact. Ladies and gentlemen, we have contact. Lewis Hamilton taking the racing line. Nico Rosberg knows he's got to kill him. Let's put it this way. He's loading ammunition, and this stuff is live. Boom! Puncture. He loses a little bit of his wing, but he doesn't care. He sees Lewis off in the distance, and yes, sir. I'm in the money. I thought it was exciting. I thought it was great. I thought it was Schumacher-esque. I thought it was very German.
Extended your championship lead. It seems, though, that Toto Wolff and Niki Lauda say what you've done is unacceptable, they said on television to us, and the crowd booed you. How are you feeling at the moment?
First of all, what I hear is that Toto said that it was a very avoidable accident, which doesn't directly give me the blame. And secondly, it was the British people who were not happy out there, and they are supporting Lewis. You know, the majority of the crowd were excited after the race for having had a great show and a great race. You know, nevertheless, of course, I'm very unhappy because for the team it's been a bad day today. You know, we have the fastest car there. We need to come first and second, and we just came second today, so that's not good.
Have you spoken to Lewis as yet?
No, but I'm sure we'll have a discussion later on.
In fact, when I spoke to him, if you look at Monaco and here that he was talking about, the stewards didn't look into either, so they were both seen as racing incidents. Do you think there's a situation where you're almost being made to look like the bad guy?
Well, you know, there's always the British media who is going to be on that side, and then if you speak to the Germans, it's more Lewis being made to look at the bad guy, you know, and that's the nature of the sport. And if that all makes it more exciting, then so be it. In the end, you know, we're here to entertain and to give all of you at home a great time. Of course, not in the way we did today, but so I don't feel that I'm being made to look at the bad guy or anything as such.
So if you go back into the garage now or go back and speak to Niki Lauda and Toto Wolff, if they are disappointed at what you've done, how will you react? Will you be disappointed? Because do you think that you haven't done anything wrong at all? Which you haven't, because they didn't look into it.
Well, first of all, that's very hypothetical to now say what they're going to say. We have to wait and see and have a discussion. And then, I'll also give my opinion.
In terms of at the time that the incident happened, do you regret that? Do you think you should just have let the race and played the long game?
For sure, I regret that we touched, yes, definitely. Because it cost me the win, and it was avoidable.
But essentially, you are now leading the championship by a greater number of points, and that must give you a slight smile.
Not at the moment, no. At the moment, it's so early days, you know, and I wanted to win here today, and I didn't win, so... So I'm not very excited at the moment about that.
Well, you know, this had to happen sooner or later. And it's just interesting, you know, the lap previous, which was the opening lap, Sebastian Vettel was in the same slot as Mr. Pretty Boy Floyd. And he was a little smart about it. And Nico, I don't think he did it on purpose, even though later Lewis was claiming that he admitted he did it on purpose. But I mean, these things happen. It was a racing incident that's spinning out of control. But for sure, you know, when you know your car is going to finish first and second, it's just a matter of who will be the winner. Then you don't want to do this thing on the opening stages of the race.
I understand, but the opportunity was there, and I believe that Nico Rosberg is much more ruthless than you give him credit for. I think he did it on purpose. He wants to win this championship, and we've been watching this all year long. These two, we've been talking on this program. When are they going to crash into each other? Who is going to have the gonads to take the other one out? Who is evil enough to do it? And now we know.
Well, as Gerhard Berger said about the Chelsea basement situation, there are no angels in this sport.
Exactly. Angels, you know where they are? Retired and at the end of the pack. I bet you Marcus Ericsson is a wonderful guy.
Yeah, but put him in a nice fast car and another quick driver, then we'll find out.
Exactly. This is what we're finding out. Now we know Nico Rosberg is a ruthless guy.
Yeah.
I love it. Anyway, on lap three, Pastor Maldonado comes to a stop. He's out of the race. What a surprise.
Oh, Pastor?
Fernando Alonso is given a drive-through penalty after his mechanics took too long to leave his car the grid.
Excuse me, Clark. I want to know what happened to Pastor. Did the chicane move and hit his front wheel?
Exactly. Now that's what happened. You know, the new chicane that moves around that catches those drivers off guard. By the way, Hamilton does pit for a new tire, by the way, on lap three, and Nico Rosberg is in the lead. And of course, Lewis Hamilton is freaking out on the radio. Lap four, Lewis Hamilton is saying, is my floor damaged? Right? What? Huh? It's all over. And by the way, on lap five, Daniel Ricciardo quietly but consistently is flying as he sets the fastest lap and sweeps past his, what was that guy's name?
I think Vettel.
Vettel, four-time world champion. Ricciardo doesn't give a damn because Ricciardo is thinking, you know what? I've got a fast car. I'm going for it. It's pretty exciting stuff. I enjoyed it. Andre Lotterer's, unfortunately, F1 race debut also came to an end. I'm not sure what happened to the car. I think it was some kind of hydraulics. Poor guy.
What was he driving?
He was driving a Keatrum.
There you go. That was wrong with the car.
The Keatrum. Yes. I don't know what's going on at Keatrum, but they did come out with a new wing. There you have it. Lap 8, Valtteri Bottas uses DRS to push past
Fernando Alonso and Muy Macho de España on the Kemmel Straight into fourth place, and Nico Rosberg heads in to have that damaged front wing changed, meaning Daniel Ricciardo now leads ahead of teammate and four-time world champion Sebastian Vettel. It's pretty exciting. I love it. Just after the accident on lap two, I mean, everybody was already talking about what's going to happen at Mercedes. This team, I mean, how is management going to react to this? The suspense was killing me to see what Niki Lauda was going to say, what Toto Wolff was going to say. It was pretty good stuff. I have to admit, everybody was excited. Now, on lap 11, that debris from all the rubber from Lewis Hamilton's car, and I think Max Chilton laid rubber all over the place, that debris that hit Nico Rosberg's car, and it was flying right in front of his face, and he couldn't get it away. Wasn't that bizarre?
That was really bizarre. Very, very bizarre.
I thought that was the gods punishing him.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, very strange stuff. I thought that was very, very, very interesting. Daniel Ricciardo pits on lap 11. Fernando pits on lap 13. He takes his 5-second stop-and-go penalty, which you can do now during your pit stop, which means they can't touch the car for 5 seconds, and then they go for it. Very good stuff. I love this race.
And you know, around lap 15, man on the move was Magnussen passing your man Jean-Éric Vergne and Nando, your Dios.
Exactly. He picks off Nando, and Nando is pissed now. I mean, he's going, what is this young whippersnapper doing?
Yeah, he was thinking, you know, I dealt with one rookie at McLaren once upon a time. I thought it was over, but he's back now.
Yeah. I understand. No, Kevin Magnussen was pushing it to the veterans on the track, and well, especially on the last two laps. I thought that was really, really fun.
Yes, absolutely. Fantastic dicing there.
Yeah. Lap 17, Nico Rosberg has a crack at getting past Sebastian Vettel, locks it up, heading into the bus stop chicane. It costs him further as Valtteri Bottas takes full advantage, dominating, kicking ass. I love Valtteri Bottas, and I'd love to see him going to Mercedes. Bottas is up to fourth with Vettel third, and four-time Belgian Grand Prix winner Kimi Raikkonen is second behind Grand Prix leader Daniel Ricciardo. So pretty good job by Red Bull. They're recovering pretty well. Ricciardo's doing very good driving this car. And it's interesting because, you know, the rookies, and Nico Hülkenberg came out and said this, that the rookies, this is an easier car to drive.
It may be an easier car to drive, but the competition is not easy. We all know that.
Well, of course not. Yeah, I mean, you've got cutthroat people like Nico Rosberg out there.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the talent pool in Formula One this year is very impressive.
Yes, no, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
One thing, you know, when two cars collide, it's just a toss of the coin as to who will keep running. Can you imagine what the face of this championship would be had Nico retired and Lewis finished second or even won the race?
Yeah, but if means nothing in Formula One.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Lap 20, Nico Rosberg heads in for his second pit stop. He's got a vibrating issue he was whining about, goes for some medium tires, and comes out in 11th place. Lap 21, Lewis Hamilton in 17th sounds a tad defeated in his attempt to get back into the points. Appears to suggest he's starting to tell the team, should we save the engine, blokes? Should we save it? I'm feeling a little tired. I want to save the motor. The motor we must save. You know, he had a fire in the previous few races. He's down one motor compared to Nico Rosberg. So I think he just wanted to get home, play some croquet.
You know, it really sounded like somebody trying to give up. But when you listen to his reasoning and the team as to why this was important, it makes a lot of sense.
It does, because you only have a few engines. And I thought, in the end, he's not going to get into the points. Let's just park it.
Yeah. All I know is, if Nico Rosberg is to finish ahead of him at Monza, I think it will be over.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's going to be great. Lap 28, Daniel Ricciardo pits from the lead to swap to medium tires and is back out in P2 with Valtteri Bottas elevated into the lead. Valtteri is going, hey, Felipe, I'm in the lead. Love it. I love that stuff. It's great. I mean, what can you do? Valtteri Bottas is out driving Felipe Massa. Felipe Massa should retire and run 7-Elevens. That's my tip of the week.
I said, I agree, sir.
Thank you. Valtteri Bottas is now moving into fourth place, looking at Sebastian Vettel. The Williams is the faster car, obviously makes the pass. down the inside of Vettel at Lecom. And, oh, by the way, so Valtteri Bottas is, you know, fighting at the front of the spear. Felipe Massa is in 12th. Just thought I'd mention that, Nasser.
Okay, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We don't talk about Romain Grosjean very much anymore, do we?
Man, what a tremendous season he had last year.
Boy, on the podium. I mean, it's amazing what happens. A half a year goes by and he's a forgotten man.
Yeah, you know, his only real hope in Formula One now is what his hope was previously, Eric Bouye. And I think Romain Grosjean would be a hard sell to Ron Dennis and McLaren people when they can, if they can get Sebastian Vettel or, you know, Fernando Alonso. Or
yes.
Even LCH.
Well, let me put it this way. Honda is making a big move into McLaren. You know, they're not only providing motors, they're providing cash, sponsorship, and they have a big say on who's driving. And Honda, you know, they don't want to go out like they did before Braun bought them for a buck. They want to come in here and dominate. They're thinking Senna, you know, they're thinking the glory days. And they've already told McLaren they want a top number one driver, and there's only three.
Yes,
Fernando.
Yeah. What I
then, then there's Fernando, and then the other guy called Fernando.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's what I've been hearing from some of the industry insiders, F1 insiders, that they are willing to pay. You know, this talk about trying to get Sebastian Vettel and Alonso. Both these drivers have a contract, but apparently Honda is willing to, you know, pay what it takes to get one of these guys. And who can
find them? Yeah, the biggest problem is Vettel is well paid. Fernando is well paid. Money at this stage of their lives is not going to be the number one motivator. It's going to be world championships.
I think it would be a good idea for Fernando Alonso to bail out and try his luck one more time with McLaren.
You think so?
I think so.
You mean we will see a loving embrace between Ron Dennis and Fernando Alonso?
Well, I'm not sure if we will see an embrace, but you know, when racers want to win races, and we have seen strange pairings in motor racing before. And I think it can happen. It will be great for the sport, let me tell you that.
Yeah. No, I know. I know. Trust me, I would love to see Honda-powered McLaren with Fernando behind the wheel winning race after race after race. It would be exciting, a thrill. I would even go out and buy a Honda if that happened.
Yeah, you can have your own Odyssey.
Exactly. Thank you very much. Lap 36, Nico Rosberg is now hungrier than ever with fresh tires, and he dispatches or gets rid of Valtteri Bottas with little trouble for third. Kimi Raikkonen is quickly in his sights, and the German breezes past him, now hunting down the leader, Daniel Ricciardo. Now, what I like about this race, especially for the podcast, it's only 44 laps. Daniel Ricciardo, by lap 36, is already thinking about the podium, the girls in the miniskirts, and that champagne. I'm telling you, these Australians are partiers. I know what's going on.
Yes.
Outstanding, outstanding race. Loved it. Lap 38, Bottas is fighting hard to keep that podium position. Just a half a second separating him and Kimi Raikkonen in third. I thought that was good. Lap 40, Valtteri Bottas says to his fellow Finn, I'm going to pass you, but there'll be a bottle of Finlandia on the table tonight. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir.
I love it. And loving it. But then, of course, the exciting last two laps and this fight between Jenson Button, Fernando Alonso, Sebastian Vettel, and Kevin Magnussen. Outstanding. Magnussen, of course, pushing the king, the swashbuckling machismo, off into the grass was shocking.
You know, some of the aerial shots with all these four cars hustling towards the corner, that was just beautiful.
It was beautiful. Fernando Alonso tries to get around the outside of Kevin Magnussen at Rivage, but runs wide onto the grass as Kevin pushes him. And Sebastian Vettel, of course, pounces, moving into fifth. The stewards later report the incident between Alonso and Magnussen is going to be investigated. I like that. You know, everything's investigated now. It's ridiculous. I'm surprised they haven't investigated us for this podcast.
No, we are innocent as charged.
Ah, los caballeros. a fantastic win. I love the last two-lap dice-up with everyone. Jenson Button fighting for his life. He's out of Formula One, I'm sure of it. Let me put it this way. I think him and Adrian Sutil should open up a nightclub.
Wow. What should you call it?
Well, that's a tough one.
Instead of calling it the Looking Glass, how about the Lux's Glass?
That's good. Or Come and See Me Sometimes, Baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I understand. So a great race. And of course, the podium, Nico, you know, he feels terrible, I think. Not really. He's a pretty good actor now. Nico is a ruthless son of a bitch, and I'm digging it. This is fantastic. This season's going to explode. We're going to see more of this. I want to know who breaks down and cries every night. That's what I want to know. What do you think?
Well, Nico also set the fastest lap at 1:50.511. And, you know, one thing that did not go down very well with the British media and, you know, people at Sky is when he said that people who were booing him were mostly British fans.
Yeah, but it was true.
But yeah, I'm not sure. I'm sure there was a big British contingent, and I wouldn't be surprised if they were booing.
But I bet you there are a couple of French guys booing him, too.
French guys and local Belgique or whatever.
Yeah.
This is getting very, very exciting, and it's going to get more ruthless, more brutal. And I will not be surprised if they do a Suzuka-style Senna and Prost at one of the races.
No. I wouldn't be surprised. And that's what everybody is tuning in for. Now the ratings on Formula One are going up. Every German is tuning in. Everybody in England is tuning in. They want to know, what is the cage rattling going to come up to? This is what Formula One needed. Bernie's happy. I mean, we're not talking about engine sounds anymore. We're talking about who is going to win this world championship, and it looks like it's going to be Nico Rosberg, unless there is a complete nuclear meltdown and Ricciardo takes over the lead. That would be so exciting that I would cry in my beer.
I can't believe it. I'm sure you can't either.
Yeah, can't really. feels a bit surreal again, I guess. Especially around here, Spa, you know, everyone was saying, oh, you won't really have a chance around here and whatever, but I think we had some really good pace today and surprised ourselves, but yeah, another win, it's very cool.
Christian Horner described it as a roll of the dice leaving you out there. Just how much pressure did you feel under to nurse your tyres to the end and still keep right on it all the way to the checkered flag?
Yeah, that was difficult. I guess when you're the leader as well, you always feel like you're the most vulnerable when it comes to maybe a pit stop or not and what to do. But basically Simon, my engineer, came on the radio and said, you know, I think 11 laps left, you know, can these tyres get to the end? And I said, yeah, I think I can keep more or less this pace. And we were able to. And the last lap got a couple more tenths out of it, so I was just having a bit of fun then.
Does that make the victory all the sweeter, that you're developing every aspect of your racing, the fact that you are able to look after the tyres so well under all the pressure that you're under?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of good things, you know, from the win today. Obviously, the last two came from a more, let's say, aggressive style of race, but today was more, let's say, calculated, I don't mean to talk myself up, but if it sounded like that, I'm sorry. But it was nice to win under different circumstances. Yeah.
Interesting that Mercedes sort of taking chunks out of each other in a way, which is only benefiting you.
Well, you know, I remember some years ago, a Red Bull driver, the only time he led the championship was in Abu Dhabi. And can you say spasiba to Petrov? Wouldn't it be something if Lewis and Nico crash and take each other out? And the double points make Daniel Ricciardo the new world champion.
That would be not only fantastic, but can you imagine? I mean, all of a sudden, Ricciardo would be worth millions and millions of dollars.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my God, Madge. And Mark Webber, what would he be thinking?
I think he's going to reopen his restaurant tag and call it Dan.
Damn.
Yeah.
Or Shazam.
There you go.
I understand.
But I think Lewis's only hope now to win the championship, you know, other things remaining same, is to do a 2 or 3, go on a nonstop winning streak for 2 or 3 races, starting with Monza. Because, you know, if Nico pulls a 35-38 point lead, then all he has to do is finish second every race. And We really frustrate LCH.
Chris, what's your take on the contact that you had with Nico?
Whilst I was driving, I didn't really understand what happened. I felt quite a big thud at the rear. And then I just watched it on the replay just now. And I mean, I gave the guy space. I don't really understand. But, it's just really gutting for the, obviously for the result, but also really for the team. You know, my guys, they work so hard every weekend. And we've had such a tough year. The guys that are on my side of the garage, but just generally in terms of the whole team. And this is just, this is not good points for the team. We could have easily had a 1-2 out there today. And so it's just an overall not great feeling. But
when you hear the crowds booing and you hear that Toto and Nicky are both laying the blame squarely at Nico's door.
I agree. Now, I hate to say it, but Nico has got the edge on Lewis when it comes to qualifying.
What?
There's something going on here.
Nico is doing the job I thought LCH will be doing.
That's my point. I think LCH, he's been touched. Let me put it that way, where you're not supposed to be touched.
Yeah, whatever it is, I think Nico Rosberg realizes he can race and beat Lewis Hamilton to win the championship. And I think he's got the confidence now that he can do it, whether it's push and shove or whatever. And like you say, you know, nice Mother Teresa's don't become Formula One world champions.
Absolutely. And I'm telling you, Nico Rosberg is so pumped up that I bet you he went out and bought a cape.
Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know what really surprised me? Him and Lewis are pretty much lifelong friends and neighbors in Monte Carlo. And then Miss Natalie Pinkham asked Lewis if he will talk to Nico. And he says, Nico doesn't talk to me. So there's no point in talking to him. So, you know, the stakes are so high now, Clark, in Formula One with money and fame and pussycat doll that, you know, you have to scratch the other guy's back as much as you can if you want to win the championship.
Yes, exactly. So, fantastic race. I'm sure you've got some things you want to put out there before we go to break?
Yeah. What I would like to do is, talk a little bit about, shall we talk about the history of Belgian Grand Prix a little bit? Okay, let's turn a few pages and go. Actually, this is our, we don't have any Belgian waffles here, but this is our Belgian Grand Prix historical goodie bag. You know, it's one of the most famous races, and this venue, the Spa, is, after going there with Mr. Brazier and Dr. Farrington last year, I can say this is the heaven you can go to without dying. I mean,
I'd love to retire in Belgium.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you like to be in Malmedy or Stavelo?
To be honest with you, I'd like to live in Chimay.
Chimay, yeah, that's another historical place.
Exactly. There's a racetrack and everything.
Yeah, this is just fantastic country for motor racing. And chocolate. The 1950 Belgian Grand Prix was won by Juan Manuel Fangio in an Alfa Romeo. Seventh was Pierre Levet, who was the driver involved in the 1955 Le Mans tragedy on board a Mercedes-Benz, ironically. The 1960 race saw double tragedy as two British drivers were killed in separate accidents, Chris Bristow and Alan Stacey. Jack Brabham was the winner with Bruce McLaren second. Look at this, man. Brabham winner, Bruce McLaren second. And how successful their cars became. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
One of them still around. Phil Hill was fourth, while two other California drivers retired from the race, Dan Gurney and Chuck Day. Lance Reventlow, son of Barbara Hutton, also failed to finish the race. Phil Hill won the 1961 Belgian Grand Prix. 1962 saw a maiden and a dominating win for Jim Clark. He would win again in 63, 64, and 65. And in 1967, we saw the Eagle fly with owner and Dan Gurney from Newport Beach, California. 1968 was the first Grand Prix win for Bruce McLaren in his own creation, an orange McLaren, and a fantastic victory there. Ayrton Senna and Michael Schumacher are the only six-time winners of the Belgian Grand Prix. And talking of Schumacher and Spa and the Belgian Grand Prix, you know, his first victory came at Spa in the following year in 1992, but his qualifying effort in his first race at Spa 1991 with the 7 of Jordan, Clark, for me, is one of the most important forever to be remembered moments in motor racing. I'll never forget early morning, 5 o'clock, 4:30, Bob Barsha saying, Michael Schumacher qualified, whatever it was, 6th or 7th. And I had goosebumps, and I still, after all these years, when I hear that 91 race qualifying, it gives me frissons. Very, very impressive.
And it changed the course of history with Flavio Briatore, Eddie Jordan. Exciting.
And here's a guy who now travels, used to travel in a Boeing 767 just with his wife and two kids. And when he went to make his debut at Spa, Eddie Jordan, being Eddie Jordan, did not book a room for him at a hotel. So he had to stay at a YMCA hostel. Can you believe that?
I believe it.
Yeah. Apart from Spa, two other tracks have hosted Belgian Grand Prix. Nivelles in 1972 and 74, Signor Emerson Fittipaldi winning on both occasions, and Zolder in the Flemish-speaking part of the country. And Zolder will always be remembered in the same unfortunate way as Imola. Zolder's dark day was in May 1982. The last Grand Prix to be held there was in 1984 when Michele Alboreto was the winner in his Ferrari. And Michael Schumacher also holds the record, among many, many others, of having the lowest grid position from which to win the Belgian Grand Prix. And that was starting from 16th for Benetton and Flavio in 1995. Jordi Dios, Nando, has never won at Spa, so I have no idea what's going on there.
He doesn't like the water.
Eau Rouge?
That's what it is.
Ah, he likes Eau Bleu, Mile 7 Bleu.
Well, he also likes San Pellegrino.
There you go. And Kimi has 4 wins at Spa. And the circuit is 17 kilometers, 19 corners, 10 left and 9 right. And like you said, good for the podcast, only 44 laps.
Keep up the good work, Nasser.
And shall we go and take a break and get some Eau Rouge for ourselves?
Yes, exactly. I need some San Pellegrino, so... let's take a quick break. We got a outstanding Motorsports Mondial. We've got an outstanding, intense interview with Max and Jos the Boss. I mean, this is right here on the heels of that big news of Max going to F1 in 2015. So, yes, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back after this brief message.
Attention, Formula One fans. How would you like to have access to an all-inclusive, USA-based Formula One website that provides discounts and reviews on Formula One ticket, apparel, travel, and collectibles companies? Go to F1FanAdvisor.com and see for yourself. Whether it's finding the highest-rated Formula One memento stores, ticketing companies, or apparel stores, F1FanAdvisor.com is the place to find it. Plus, F1FanAdvisor.com has negotiated some serious discounts for USA-based fans with select companies on their site, so check it out now. And for a limited time, F1FanAdvisor.com is offering their free report, The 5 Costly Mistakes to Avoid When Purchasing Formula One Tickets, so you can avoid the ticket-buying pitfalls that most F1 fans make. Go to www.f1fanadvisor.com to see how big of a discount you can get. It only takes seconds and it's completely free. Get your discounts, plus the free report, The 5 Costly Mistakes to Avoid When Purchasing Formula One Tickets, absolutely free. Race to www.f1fanadvisor.com now.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards to everybody. And we sure did go around the world. Before I talk about Motorsports Mondial, let me say a few words about Moa Mondial. A few weeks ago, I took a quick trip back home, Cape Town, Karachi. Very hot and humid there, and the trip was designed in such a way that I had a 12-hour layover in jolly old England, London Heathrow. And, of course, Mr. Peter Brazier was there, so I would like to thank him very much. And we did our usual pilgrimage to Brooklands, fantastic racing history, museum there, aviation history there. And like I said before, if anybody has a 8 or 10-hour layover in London, And instead of hanging out at Costa Coffee at Heathrow, I would highly, highly recommend Brooklyn's. And it was at the banking at Brooklyn's that we said, okay, let's do an interview. So we sat down in Mr. Brazier's, European support vehicle and got his thoughts on the F1 season so far. And then on the way back, that was a very, very tight schedule for me. On Saturday, I went to the Nürburgring for the DTM race and the F3 race. And the real thing was I wanted to catch and do an interview with Max Verstappen. And you know what was really good? His mother, Sophie Kumpen, who was also a European karting champion, she was also there, and I spoke to her briefly, and she told me she used to race against your favorite, Fisico, in her karting days. And so we have the interview from Jos and Max from there, and then we also interviewed a young American kid, Santino Ferrucci, who's racing in F3 Euro Series, young kid from Florida. And then on Sunday, I went to Oschersleben, which is what used to be East Germany. And our friend, Mr. Inam Ahmed, was racing in the German championship. He was on the podium in both the final and pre-final, ahead of Michael Schumacher's son, Mick Jr., so which is very impressive. And he has now extended his lead in the German karting championship, and is also leading the CIK FIA karting championship. So a lot of good things are happening. And talking of Max Verstappen, this is very interesting. Since Jean-Éric Wurne was not blowing away rookie teammate Daniel Kvyat, we at F1 Weekly have been predicting that Dr. Marco was sharpening his machete, and we all know the blow that was delivered a few weeks ago. Many were expecting another Red Bull Jr. with the famous name Carlos Sainz Jr., that he may be promoted to F1, but pushing 17-year-old Max, who is in his first year of motor racing, is a big risk. But, you know, I guess sometimes, like his father said, that in Formula One, the train does not stop too many times. And he should know after having driven for so many teams. And Max's response, he's a nice kid, you know. According to him, does not matter how old I am. All that matters is how fast I can drive. And today there was a headline in Autosport magazine, which I have not read, that he thinks he drives like Nando. And that's quite a comparison coming from a 17-year-old.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting. Many drivers over the years have put in great first-year performances, but to do this straight out of karting into European F3, we're not talking Estonian F3 here, against some good and experienced drivers, is a great achievement. And I know he's very young, but let's see what happens. We wish Max all the best in 2015 and beyond. I have to say a lack of experience will catch up to him sooner or later, and we see that with the Kevin Magnussen situation also. Like Max's father said, the train does not come often in Formula One, and when it stops at Victoria Station or Charing Cross, you must hop on. What is your take on this young kid going into Formula One? Do you think he will survive?
You know, I think he will survive, especially because he's comes from a racing family. I'm sure that his mom and dad have prepared him for the upcoming pressures. And, you know, it's a little different today. I think it's the younger drivers cope with F1 a lot better than they used to. But on the other hand, I think Jacques Villeneuve had an article on his opinion, and he made some good points that, you know, you're not going through the system and earning your way into F1. I mean, Max Verstappen just started driving cars. He was in karting last year, and now in 1 year he's going to be in F1. I think that's a big leap. Not only that, but I think, you know, you're spoiling the child in a sense where he and he's missing out. He's not going to, you know, I think he should have done Renault 3.5. A lot of horsepower, a great series, win a couple of championships, and then go to F1. I mean, he could have signed a contract for Toro Rosso, Red Bull, or whomever. But I think it's a bit early, but we'll see what happens. It is what it is, and we've seen Daniel Kvyat have a lot of success this season.
You know, a lot of this similar things were said by myself included about Daniel Kvyat going from GP3 to Formula One against a driver who is very, very good, Jean-Éric Wurne, and look what has happened. Kvyat's arrival there has cost basically Jean-Éric Wurne his Formula One career.
So, I agree.
So let's see what happens with with the Max Verstappen situation. Now, from Max, we go to the Marussia mayhem. And talking of Jacques Villeneuve, I have a few things to say on that issue. Please stay tuned. With the Marussia mayhem, what the hell was that? I was on Facebook looking at Alexander Rossi's post saying that he will be making his debut at Spa, and I was very happy for him and his dad, Peter. They have certainly worked very hard for this, as we have been following his career since he was a teenager and dominating Formula BMW here in the U.S. I guess the next day, Western Union man knocked at the door of Mr. John Booth, the head honcho at Marussia, and there was express financial delivery at Caterham also. This situation with Marussia was very strange. You know, Max Chilton's dad is like one of the executives at AON Insurance, a very wealthy man, and I'm surprised that they fell behind. And announcement was made that the son would be replaced, only to be taken back in 24 hours. So who knows what's going on there?
Yeah, I didn't like it. I thought that was a disaster. I mean, come on. You have to get a check, or he's you're out, off the team. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But I understand bills have to be paid, Nasser.
Yeah, as far as the team is concerned, it had the desired effect.
And, it did.
Yeah, and there was also express financial delivery at Caterham. Perhaps Kobayashi was a day late and a yen short. Andre Lotterer, as we said, was one time driving for Colin Collis' sports car team. And Chowski, being a good dentist, knows how to pull a fast deal and numb the other driver. Strange world Formula One has become. And now they're talking about that at Monza, at Caterham, we might see Carlos Sainz Jr. and another Spaniard, believe it or not, Roberto Meri, who I believe some years ago won the European Championship, F3 European Championship, and currently is racing in DTM. And now Swiss Miss, Miss Simona Di Silvestro, is claiming she is ready for Formula One next year. Interestingly, her main financial backer is an Indian businessman. And same is the claim by Mrs. Susie Wolf. I have an idea. Why not have these prancing ladies in 2015 replace Fernando Alonso and Kimi Raikkonen?
That would be great. Now that would be interesting.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
Yeah, one of them will at least do better than Kimi the way he's been going lately.
Well, Kimi, you know, Kimi's a very moody guy. He keeps it all inside.
Yeah. Apparently, Mr. Mattiacci likes him, so who knows? Kimi may be there again.
It's very possible. Fernando's wonderful, so who knows what's going to... You know, Ferrari is such a mess. We'll see what happens, and I hope they straighten it out. But the problem is, next year, all eyes are going to be on Honda, and Ferrari, once again... I think are going to play catch up. I think Ferrari have a number of years before they catch up. That's why Fernando, who's 33, needs to make a decision fast. He's running out of time.
You know, since Honda is coming after this, obviously, I don't know, but I have a guess. They have not submitted their engine for approval and whatever it is called to FIA. But I have a feeling that they must have learned the trick from Mercedes how to you know how they have put the two parts of the turbocharger at different ends of the engine?
Correct.
So I will not be surprised, given their pedigree and previous success, that they will come out very strong. Not saying they will win the championship first year, but who knows?
Well,
I'm really looking forward to the Honda-McLaren partnership rebirth.
Yeah, but don't forget that every engine next year, Ferrari, Renault, will have copied Mercedes.
Great.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's a given.
Okay, cool. Now we move on to our favorite, Hapidos. Tremendous battle between McLaren-supported driver Stoffel Vandoorne and Ferrari-supported Rafael Marcello. Great race. Both are rookies in GP2 this year. On Saturday, Lello, which is Marcello, took his maiden win of the season. Last year, he was European F3 champion. Vandoorne, who started from pole and led most of the race, was second. They are talking about him also coming to Formula One next year. This is a very, very impressive young racing talent. Cousin Felipe Nasr won the sprint race on Sunday, his fourth win of the season. Johnny Cecotto was second and Julian Palmer third. Palmer still leads the championship over Felipe by 32 points. GP3, all-British podium in Saturday's race won. Dean Stoneman was the winner. Championship leader Alex Lynn won the second race on Sunday and extends his lead to 34 points. Third win of the season for the English driver, Richie Stanaway from New Zealand, was second, and Swiss Alex Fontana in third. Have you ever seen a GP3 race, Senor?
Yes.
Do you like the series and the sound they're making now?
Absolutely. I love it. I watch GP3 and GP2 at Monza.
Good. Okay, from Russia with Love and Formula Uno, Charlie Whiting was in Russia in mid-August and has given two thumbs up to the Sochi Autodrome, which will host the first ever Russian Grand Prix coming up soon. Charlie is quoted as saying, "Everything has been done to the highest standards, and the circuit is ready 60 days in advance, which is very rare." And it's at the Olympic Stadium Arena area, and I think it looks pretty good. So let's hope we have a good race there.
Yeah. I mean, Charlie Whiting didn't really have much choice in saying what he said.
No, I think if it's not up to their standards, they have to approve the circuit.
Yeah, but I think there were a bunch of Russian T-55 surrounding him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The siege of Charlie Whiting?
I'm afraid so. Nothing changes. They like tradition in Russia.
Yeah, that's very true. Okay, Jacques Villeneuve, like Mark Webber, has an opinion on everything. According to his Maple Leaf mantra, there is something wrong with the super license system when it allows a 17-year-old eligibility to race in Formula One. According to him, it will either destroy Verstappen, or if he is successful right away, F1 will be meaningless. Well, here is my opinion. F1 was not meaningless when a rookie was on pole in Australia on his debut on board the best car by a lap. What say you, Mr. Rogers? You also have a Clorox opinion on everything.
I do, and I do love Clorox'd opinions. No, you have to agree a little bit with Jacques Villeneuve, sure, because he comes from a time when, let me put it this way. Jacques Villeneuve, when he was a rookie in Formula One, 1996, he had won the Indianapolis 500.
Plus the car championship.
Exactly. He had, in other words, on his CV, it didn't have, his elementary school and stuff like that.
Yeah, but times are changing, and if you have not done something, does not mean somebody else cannot do it.
Trust me, I agree with that. But in the end, do you think a little experience, if you already have fantastic talent and you're going to Formula One when you're 17, what if you had a little more experience? Just think how much more fantastic he would be.
That is very true, and there is a lot of weight in that statement. But, Clark, I look at it this way, and we already talked about this earlier in the podcast. I can take a lot of names here, but I will not do that. But just look at those guys who come into GP2 or even World Series by Renault with very good credentials in karting and junior formulae. And for whatever reason, they do not win the first season and go into second or third year of World Series by Renault and GP2. Who on earth is going to look at them when you have a talent like Max Verstappen coming?
I agree. I mean, look at Pastor Maldonado. How long was he in GP2?
4 years.
Thank you very much.
Well, yeah, so that's why, in a way, that as risky as it is, if the train is stopping, the bullet train, hop on it. Who knows when it will come?
I agree. No, what's great about Max, he's got fantastic parents that know the business. That's what gives him an advantage.
If your father is karting champion Formula One driver, your mother is a karting champion in Europe. I mean, that's all motor racing.
That's not only that, but Jos Verstappen's teammate was Michael Schumacher at Benetton with Flavio Briatore.
Yeah, that took care of that issue.
It did, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you become teammate to Schumacher, Ayrton Senna, Nando. I mean, it's over.
It is done, kaput.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and here is prime example of that. Kovi in the news. Heikki Kovalainen, a one-time Grand Prix winner and teammate to LCH at McLaren, recently tested a BMW DTM car, and I hope we see him in action in tin tops next year. Kovi was on his way to winning the inaugural GP2, which we already discussed, when late in the season, Nico Rosberg rained on his parade. Then at McLaren, LCH stole his umbrella, and Kovi is still looking for a Klondike bar to share with Kimi. And I think Kovi is a nice guy. Maybe that's what his problem is. But I would love to see him get back in motor racing. And talking about World Series by Renault, He was a champion in that series. Shall we move on?
Yes, please.
We crossed the pond. Congratulations to Gabby Chavez of Colombia on winning the Indy Lights Championship over chap from UK, Jack Harvey, who came in second despite winning four of the last five races of the season. And Jack Harvey is so happy to be in America. He's saying that he wants to stay here and do another season of Indy Lights or Indy Cars or your favorite, Camping World Truck Series?
It is my favorite.
Yeah.
That's what I live for.
Yeah. Formula E, the high voltage racing series, will be turned on in October with the opening round in the another hotbed of motorsports called Beijing. The final preseason test took place at Donington with many drivers who took an early exit from the F1 Boulevard of Broken Dreams. Sebastian Buemi was the fastest, followed by Nicolas Prost and Frank Montani. Bruno Senna was fourth, followed by Sam Bird, talk about bird on a wire, and Lucas Di Grassi was sixth. Nelson Piquet Jr., your hero, will drive for Team China.
Don't even get me started on Piquet driving for Team China.
All I want to know, Formula E should have a night race in Singapore.
All I want to know is, do they race in the wet, and does everybody wear rubber boots?
Will you go to any of their races? I think they'll have a race or two in the U.S. also.
Well, the biggest problem is I won't be able to find it.
You won't hear it?
That's how I find races. I hear them.
Yes, exactly. You know, talking of hearing them, let me tell you, I was at the Nürburgring for a few hours, and I was in the parking lot, and they were starting these, they were on the grid, what is called the Auto GP series, which used to be Formula 3000. They sound like a real, real racing car. Let me tell you that.
Yeah. No, and just a few days ago, I tested two electric vehicles, the BMW i3, and I also tested the Fiat electric vehicle, the Fiat 500.
Wow.
And you know what?
Tell me.
They were very fast.
Really?
Yes, a lot of torque, very fast.
Good, good. Good to hear that.
Mm-hmm. You just put in a CD of a Matra V12, and then you're on your road.
There you go.
So there you have it. Anyway, I think we've got some good interviews. Why don't you introduce them?
Yes, sir. This first one is with Max Verstappen, who will be beating the record of Jaime Alguersuari by almost 2 years when he starts in Melbourne as 17-year-old Formula One Grand Prix driver. What a tremendous career. A couple of years ago, I met him in Vegas when he was there for the Scusa National. Very impressive karting credentials for himself and his mother and his father, as we have said before. And he's very nice, down-to-earth kid. With all this hoopla and success coming so quickly, I think he has his feet still on the ground, just like Valtteri Bottas. And then his papa was there also. And, of course, this was an interview conducted just a day or two before the announcement. And it's interesting to hear what Jos had to say when I asked him if they put him in Formula One, will you go for it? So please enjoy both these conversations with Max and Jos. And my thanks to these Flying Dutchmen.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Nürburgring with the racing sensation of F3 for this year, Mr. Max Verstappen. Max, welcome back to F1 Weekly. Last time we were in Vegas when we met you 2 years ago, and here you are fighting for the championship. Tell us what has been going on this year, please.
Yeah, I mean, I made a step from karting to F3. It was a big step, to be honest. But in the beginning, I made some mistakes, rookie mistakes, I can say. But at the moment, it's just going really well, and I just had my eighth victory of the season already.
Congratulations. I was talking to your dad earlier, and he said that when you went for Formula Renault testing, you were very quick, and you were very quick in F3 testing and felt comfortable. What were you thinking before the season started, what you could do?
Well, I didn't really have any ambitions. I just wanted to do my best and make as less as mistakes as possible, and try just to finish races. But I mean, the expectations got a bit better already after the first weekend, where I scored my first podium, second, and from there on just got better and better.
Well, you know, six races in a row is very, very hard in any form of motor racing. When you were after you won your first race, second race, third race, and you were leading your fourth and fifth race, did you think that, hey, this is just too good to be true?
Well, I mean, we had a great car in Spa and in Nürburgring, so I knew it was possible. And I mean, I think those were also one of the easiest races I've had.
Why is that?
I mean, everything I think was perfect at that time. I adapted well to the circuit. The car was handling good, so it was also, you know, when you have a good car, it's easier to drive. And yeah, from there on, it's just control the race.
First victory is always the best. Which one was the most satisfying for you?
I think the one in Spa when I started fifth and I finished first at the end. But I overtook two guys in Lecombe, so that was a nice move. And yeah, I was really happy with that race.
Okay, you're very young and doing very well. Are you already a big superstar in Holland?
The last week I had a lot of news coming through and a lot of new papers. Newspapers, they had an article about me. But I mean, at the moment I'm focusing on F3 and I don't worry too much about what they write.
So if you're walking down to get some coffee in Hilversum or Anderlecht, every man will know you?
I don't know. I haven't done it yet, so we will see.
Okay. Now, the big news you're referring to is the signing by Red Bull, and you were also being quoted by Mercedes. What was the main decision based on to go with Red Bull, in your opinion?
I mean, we were already talking since 2010 with Red Bull, and I mean, this year in karting, I mean, it's always hard to judge how good you are at the end because it's not a car. But from this year, I had some really good results, and also they saw it. So yeah, we were always in contact, like I said, and yeah, the feeling got better and better, and at the end, we made the decision.
Okay. Now, if Dr. Marco was to say to you, "Hey, Max, where do you want to race next year?" Realistically, what would be your answer?
To be honest, I really don't know. At the moment, just focusing on F3, and we still have to speak about next year. For me, at the moment, doesn't matter.
You know, it's very rare in motor racing to see a rookie win a championship. This year we have two rookies, you and Esteban Ocon, which is fantastic for both of you guys and for the sport. Do you think you have still enough races left to beat him to the championship?
I think it's hard. I need some luck as well from his side, that if he can make mistakes or bad luck, what I had also in the beginning of the year with some mechanical issues. But at the moment, I'm just trying to do my best and try to gain as much points as I can.
With a big company like Red Bull as your sponsor now, do you feel any extra pressure?
No, I'm really relaxed. So I mean, the only thing you can do is your best, and more than that, you can't do.
Well, I asked you a question in Vegas when you were in karting, and I'm going to ask you again. Just a matter of time, a year or two, you're in Formula One. Can I come and do an interview with you like this?
When I'm in F1?
Yeah.
Of course you can do an interview.
Okay, you're on the record twice. Thank you for that. Finally, how about a message for our listeners, please? And tell them about your website also.
Thank you for following, and I hope it was a good interview, and you can always visit my website www.verstappen.nl. So yeah, I hope to see you there.
Thank you very much. Okay, folks, I'm here with Jos, the boss. Jos, welcome back to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Feels good after he won the first race, so I'm happy.
And the stewards have allowed him to keep the race?
Yes. I mean, I think especially in Max's case was a different situation, because he arrived at the corner where they just start
yellow
giving the yellow flag. So I think in Max's case he would have won it anyway. So, but this is good. Nobody got a penalty, and it stays the same.
Okay, now, 2 years ago we met in Vegas. Your son was in karting doing an excellent job. And here we are in a short time of frame. I see Red Bull on the car fighting for the championship in his rookie season. Is this all planned, or has this been a surprise to you?
It's all planned, of course. you never know how a driver copes with a switch from go-kart to cars. But then in Max's case, again, when he jumped into a Formula Renault in the first time, it was roughly 1 year ago. This time, 1 year ago, and I was scared. I mean, he drove away flat out and I said, what? Take it easy, take it easy. But he was so in control in the car. And basically that he also shows here in F3 what is a very challenging category. And if you see how he copes with the car and the speed and how many races he wins in his rookie season in motorsport, I think he's doing a really excellent job.
This is way beyond excellent. Let me tell you, when it was announced, I've been following motor racing since early 70s, and when it was announced he was going F3, and I knew the kid is very talented, I said, you know, it's just pushing too much. How about him? A question, you know, confidence of a driver is very important. When you decided to go F3, were you concerned that it might, if it not work out, might not be good for his mental state?
Of course. You know, every step can be dangerous, and I think in Max's case, we did. We have done quite a lot of testing in a Formula Renault. Then we did one test in a Formula 3 car. I remember I was in Valencia, and he was stunning. He was unbelievable. He got in a car, and in 7-8 laps time, he was there, right on the top of the timesheets. And then I knew that the car suited his driving style as well. And that's what he said. I mean, this car is so much more balanced. He say, this is more of a racing car. This is what I want to do. And from there on, we concentrated on F3.
Okay, now a question I want you to answer, not as a father, but as a racing driver. At your age, how good were you compared to your kid? Or is the kid at your age better than you?
I think he's better. I think he's more complete as a racing driver. He's very, very talented. But also, I think the way I went on with him, you know, I was, you know, because I have done it myself, you know, all the tricks and experience I had, I was giving over to him, you know, to help him to get as good as possible. And definitely, he had an advantage over me. But he's definitely more in control, let's say like that.
Mother karting champion, father karting champion. Did he ever try to do anything else apart from motorsports?
Yeah, he played football when he was young. But we knew straight away he didn't have the talent for the football. He knows. But I think motorsport is his life. I mean, you can see he's only on the internet, only watching the races. He's watching motorcycle. He's only interested in motor races.
Talking about motorcycle racing, are you a MotoGP fan too?
I watch it on television. Yes, I've seen the last race in Indianapolis was.
What do you think of Marc Marquez?
Unbelievable, unbelievable.
Just like your son, huh?
I hope so. I hope my son will get as good as he is. Yeah. Then it's a real storm in Formula One.
Okay. A lot of news in the last few weeks that Mercedes-Benz was chasing your son and so was Red Bull. What was the main reason for going with Red Bull?
I mean, we had some conversations with Mercedes, and I think they're just planning, you know, to do something with a rookie. And I think Red Bull is in a lot further stadium. And we just had a good feeling with Red Bull. Already we have discussions for 4 years with Red Bull. So a long time we are already talking to each other.
Okay.
And I think they got more and more interesting. You know, they were very interesting what Max was doing on the track, especially Spa and Nürburgring. I think that's where Max showed his real talent. Again, yesterday here in the wet, and yesterday in the race, you know, in those conditions, it's so difficult to do a race. And I think Max is, in all kind of circumstances, he's on the limit.
Now, for next season, who will make the decision where he goes, Red Bull or you and Max?
We will discuss it together. I mean, Red Bull, Helmut Marko and us, we're going to sit together and see what we're going to do.
What's your preference?
I don't know. Can't say. I can't discuss that with the press, obviously. And I think it's good. You know, we are going to sit together next week. So we will see. Maybe some outcome tomorrow, next week.
Okay, cool. Now, if they say, let's put him in Formula One, would you go with that?
We will see.
Okay.
For sure, it's a tough one, but I think Max's talent can do it. I believe in it. But it also depends on how you prepare him for that.
How about this year's Formula One season, the sound of the cars, how they look, and the competition? And do you think this rivalry will become very nasty in the second half between Hamilton and Rosberg?
No, I think Mercedes will control them, that's for sure. And I think it's important for Mercedes to win the Constructors' Championship. So they will do all what is necessary to get them in control. So I'm not worried about that. The looks, I mean, the noses have, you know, has looked been better. So, but for sure, next year we'll be back. And the sound, I think, is up to the F1, you know, to do something about it. But I think at the end of the day, it's not the sound only. I mean, as long as the competition is there, and I think lately we have seen some great races. So I still think it's a very good, you know, it's the best racing series. But maybe the noise, you know, of course we all like the high RPM noise engines and, you know, the hair comes straight up. But
chills.
I think it will come back. At the end of the day, it will come back. It's all a new start for a lot of people. But at the end of the day, I think this is the right way to go. And the competition, you know, after a rule change like this, you only can hope for is that all the teams are pretty much the same speed, but obviously Mercedes is a lot faster. But I think during the years that will come back, and you know, and then the competition will be more and more tough.
Okay. Finally, a request: we have listeners all over the world, including Netherlands. How about a message for our listeners, please?
For the
listeners
from
F1 Weekly, we have listeners all over the world.
I think it's good to have motor fans following also Formula 3. Because this is where the very little drivers grow bigger, and I think here you will see the future champions in Formula 1. So it's good to watch this as well, and hopefully we speak to you a lot more times in the future.
Okay, please allow me one bonus question. There's another Dutch driver, very talented, Robin Freins. How do you rate him?
I think he have done a really good, you know, really good seasons, you know, when he was winning the championships. And what can I say? I mean, why he's not in Formula One? You know, there are reasons for. I don't know all of them, but I don't know. I mean, but definitely he's very talented.
Thank you very much.
Joss and Max, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now, here's Tim with Tech Talk.
Welcome, listeners, for another insightful discussion on F1 technology. Today, I'd like to thank one of our listeners in particular, Michael, for sending in a great topic for discussion. I'm always accepting new suggestions, so please send them to info@f1weekly.com. Today's topic is the Frick system, the front-to-rear interconnected suspension system. I love this system. Well, I did before it was banned. It's a multidisciplinary engineering wonder that exploits aerodynamics, hydraulic mechanisms, and race car dynamics to produce a really innovative and effective solution. So let's start with some basics. Before we even talk about Frick, let's talk aerodynamics. Here's something interesting you might not have known. Wings produce extra downforce when they are close to the ground. Here's a way to demonstrate. Take a vacuum cleaner and detach the hose. Hold on to the hose and turn the vacuum on. You probably won't feel much, but you might feel the hose suck itself forward a little bit. Now, slowly and carefully, bring the hose toward the ground, preferably a hard floor and not carpet. Be careful not to scratch whatever floor you choose. As you move the hose closer to the ground, you'll start to feel the vacuum start to pull itself toward the ground more strongly. And if you make contact with the ground, it can be very hard to pull the vacuum away from the floor. Why is this? Well, as the vacuum sucks air into the tube, air from the room moves to fill the space left behind. Air is continually flowing from the room into the hose. As a result, the pressure in the hose doesn't drop by very much. But as you bring the hose closer to a surface, the gap for air to travel through becomes smaller, so the air in the room has a harder time filling the space left behind from the air that is moved through the hose. The decrease in quantity of air in the hose creates a stronger vacuum. Remember, F1 wings are essentially moving vacuums, Instead of a household vacuum, which uses electrical power to spin a fan which creates low-pressure air, an F1 wing is like a single fan blade being pushed through the air by the motion of the car. And as that wing comes closer to the ground, less air is able to fill the space behind the wing. So what air is there gets stretched thinner, pressure decreases, and downforce increases. So let's think of building the perfect F1 car. The front wing should be as close to the ground as possible. But that presents a new challenge. Now it's time for a different experiment that will help illustrate that. This is a simpler one and will produce a much more obvious result, but be careful. Take a few steps and then suddenly stop moving your feet. Lock them to the floor. Do you notice yourself tipping forward? That's because the braking force comes from your feet against the floor, but your body's mass is higher up. This braking force acting below your body mass creates a torque, which is a twisting force, and that causes you to tip forward. This happens with every car when the brakes are applied. The car will lurch forward. Normally, that's not a problem, except that we just decided to build an F1 car with the front wing as close to the ground as possible. Well, now braking hard at La Source for turn one of the Belgian Grand Prix, and we've slammed our front wing into the ground. It's back to the pits for our car, and back to the drawing board for our engineers. That's where Frick came in. Frick uses a tube of hydraulic fluid that spans the length of the car. This fluid is free to move, front to back. Under braking, the car slows, and the fluid flows forward toward the front of the car and into the front suspension. This stiffens the front suspension, causing the car to sag less in the front than it normally would have. So the braking force is used to push the front of the car up and resist the car's tendency to lean forward under braking. This allows key aerodynamic elements to be placed closer to the road surface, increasing their performance without damaging them. For better or for worse, this idea has been retired. Even though the only moving parts in Frick are fluid and, to a lesser extent, the suspension, Frick does use the suspension to alter wing angles, therefore violating Article 3.15 of the F1 technical regulations, which prevents devices not rigidly attached to the sprung part of the car from affecting aerodynamic performance, in essence, making the Frick system a movable aerodynamic device. If you're dying for F1 to restart from the summer holiday and you have a free moment, I encourage you to look back at previous devices which have become banned for various reasons. Six-wheeled cars, cars with fans at the back, and lots more. It's fascinating to see what engineers have invented, and just when you think they've invented it all, the coming years are sure to bring new surprises in the unending quest to save hundredths of a second. Thanks for listening.
Tim, keep up the good work. Nass, you know what we have to do now?
50 ways to leave your lover. Hop on
Thank you
the bus. Good.
Exactly. Thank you very much. Okay, 50 words from the F1 Weekly Forum. We'll start with Kei Hei Sin. Ricciardo learns how good it is when your rivals concentrate on putting each other off the track. Rosberg learns the advantages of putting your teammate off the track. Rosberg also learns that his teammate, fans, and most importantly, Eddie Jordan, are not one bit impressed. Later, DC and Fast Eddie give us as much entertainment as the race. Neon Zapper, as the Nico and Lewis saga continues, so does the excitement. Daniel Ricciardo brought Red Bull's 50th Grand Prix victory as he brought himself within one victory of Nico Rosberg. The chicanes filled with Vettel, Magnussen, Button, and Alonso all vying for fifth place finish. In the end, a rude crowd booed. Yay, one heck of a race at one heck of a track. The well-predicted Mercedes management meltdown is well underway. Dr. Mark F., oh joy, oh rapture, why didn't we see this race when we were there last year? Wonderful fights up and down the field as top drawer Scandinavians show their class, and young Daniel collects another Mercedes fumble. There's no fooling the Spa crowd or even Eddie Jordan as second drawer Rosberg inherits
Seb's booing mantle. And finally from Leon Bray, great race weekend, although the weather didn't make much difference in qualifying. Racing all the way to the last place. The McLaren pair showed how to race teammates, and Kimi showed a few sparks of brilliance and even finished ahead of Fred. Prost and Senna all over again at Mercedes, and Red Bull have found out you don't always need great gobs a downforce. Thanks, everyone, at the F1 Weekly Forum. Nasser, thanks for those interviews. Outstanding. And thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Any predictions for Monza?
Well, you know, it's going to be a Mercedes. They are talking a lot about Williams having a great chance, but I just think the Mercedes has the mojo dialed in. And it Lewis has to win this race if he has any chance of... he is very quick, you know, and I hope and think he will win the race, and let's see what happens.
Oh, yeah. Williams have to be disappointed with themselves. They were the talk of the town when we went to Spa-Francorchamps. They had the speed, the straight-line speed, and you know what? It didn't happen. Bottas made it to the podium with that last pass on Kimi Raikkonen because he's definitely faster than the Ferraris. But what's really impressive for me is strategy, setup, and great driving from Red Bull and Ricciardo, who know they are a slow, slow car, but yet won at Spa. That was a big deal, and I expect Red Bull to shine once again with a lot of low downforce. It's going to be interesting, but I think Williams should start getting some binoculars and start looking at what Red Bull is doing, because Williams have the speed, but they just don't have the knowledge.
Well said, Guru.
Thank you. I am going for the Guru Junior position.
There you go.
Sim, sim, salabim.
There you go.
My prediction, are you ready?
Si.
Fernando Alonso wins at Monza.
Shocking.
The Tavosi go screaming. Everybody's happy. The Pope comes and visits.
And then the announcement is made. He's leaving for McLaren Honda.
Exactly.
Wow.
I know.
They should have made that announcement at Budapest.
They should have. Thank you very much.
By a text message to all the media.
Yeah, they could even, he sees, who's my favorite test driver?
Luca Bedo?
No, from Spain, the other guy who used to work.
Pedro de la Rosa.
Thank you very much. Pedro. He's a texting guru, you know.
Oh, I know.
Yes, I know you know. So, no, great stuff. I'm looking forward to Monza. Anyway, there you have it. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.